Hey, deserving listeners, this is chapter 11 in our deep dive on the psychology of neo-Nazis, and we promise we will eventually get into specifics regarding this psychology. We have been talking a lot about the history and the factors that lead up to this sort of thing, which has to do with psychology, because we're not just individual creatures, we're societal creatures, and so we have to talk about the societal factors that lead to an individual becoming a neo-Nazi, but in this deep dive, we are going to pick up where Berto left off. This is the Psychology in Seattle podcast, and I'm your host, Dr. Kirk Honda. I'm a therapist and a professor.
My name is Humberto Castañeda, and I provide training and coaching mostly for carnival barkers.
All right,
so trigger warning, horrible warning. I'm going to go through a series of events that happened in our country starting in the 1800s where they were motivated by race, by racism and white nationalism. 1921, this is a famous one, the Tulsa race riot.
Yeah.
14 hours in 1921, mass violence engulfed Tulsa, Oklahoma. White rioters.
Well, the precursor to this, and maybe you're getting this, is that black people had carved out a community for themselves and were upstanding citizens, family people. They were thriving, doing well. And they had created a little community of business and homes, and the white people were not going to have that in Oklahoma.
That's right. I mean, so the story was that there was a Negro uprising. That was the story. And so because there was a Negro uprising spreading, the riot started, they started killing, looting, shooting.
Yeah, I think it was planned.
Bombing.
I think they had planned it.
Oh,
they said, on this day, we're going to kill all the black people.
Yeah.
And we'll just say that it was an uprising.
Yeah.
Because no one has cell phone cameras.
They even used planes to bomb the area.
I'm glad you mentioned that because in the Watchmen TV show, they have a plane, I believe. And I remembered that as we were talking about it. I'm like, was that an addition? But yeah, planes that had machine guns on them or bombs that they were dropping or something, right? Like the planes were part of the assault on the black people in this town.
Yeah. So what you were alluding to is
it just says it's organized, it's militaristic.
Yeah, and it's supported by the government structure. Because, okay, so what you're saying is they have this community. The community is doing pretty well. They're thriving. They're coming along. It is a complete threat to the white establishment of power there and a lot of the white people there, right? So they organize a thing, and they're basically planning, like, if we do this, we'll trigger this, and then that'll give us an excuse, and we'll be basically just, like, get them out of here, quote-unquote. But Final Solution style, right? Like, why don't we just kill them?
Well, Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah.
A similar thing, right?
After all this, they passed fire codes, which made their rebuilding impossible. And 1,700 Klansmen marched through Tulsa the following year and won election in most of the local offices.
Yeah.
So this isn't like, well, yeah, some, you know, a few people. No, this was institutional. Well after the Civil War. Horrible. Like planes dropping bombs in this country. I can't be more angry about this. Like, you know, growing up in Bogota, I always idolized the U.S., because all I saw was like the little 80s window. And I saw, oh man, they look so organized and so nice and comfy there. And when I would visit my mom, it was certainly better than Bogota in the 80s. And things seemed like so wealthy and prosperous and the future. And everyone seemed nice and followed the law. And man, what a paradise. That was my impression. And so it really... As I slowly, and it was a slow process, slowly started learning about the past, it really like tarnished that image in a sad way. And reading a lot of these things, I go, and you know, I get it, like history is horrible in general, but this is recent. This is the 60s, you know, and it's not protest. They kind of knocked someone above the head with a baton. They bombed and killed children.
Yeah. And it's currently happening with the neo-Nazi attacks, the white nationalists, the white supremacist attacks on churches and synagogues and other places, killing all sorts of people. You know, the new playbook is a lone gunman who walks in and guns down everybody. That's the plan. They understand, maybe, that if you show up with a whole gang of people, you're very noticeable. But if you're just one guy with an AR-15 and countless ammunition, then you can do a lot of damage, you know?
Yeah.
And you're only one less person on the streets, you know? You get to retain all of your people. So yeah, it's still happening.
Overland Park Jewish Community Center shooting in 2014. I'm skipping over like horrible situations over and over. These are just like some highlights. But in 2014, we talked about...
Well, it sounds like you're highlighting the major mass killing events.
Yeah.
And that's what you're focusing on, which is effective. And we understand that behind the scenes, the system and the politicians and the propaganda and the laws that are passed and the, you know, the suppression of the vote and you know, all of that stuff, Hollywood is all conspiring to put down people of color.
And again, that when this is why I have such little sympathy for the commentary of like, yeah, but I mean, white people are having it pretty hard right now. You know, like the other day I lost a job to someone and my aunt couldn't get health care. And like, first of all the problems you're describing are your own doing for the people you voted for. But aside from that, they're bombing, shooting, massacring, dragging from a truck, lynching. Shut the F up, man.
Yeah.
Like just perspective.
Yeah.
So Overland Park Jewish Community Center 2014. And then the thing is that the dude who received a death sentence for his crimes, rightfully so, he yelled Sieg Heil at conviction and gave the Nazi salute. So this isn't like, well, you know, went a little mad and did a thing. No, it's the ideology. This was, as we've talked about, it's a soldier in a war. 2019, El Paso, Texas, 21-year-old white man kills 23 people in an allegedly attack targeting Latinos at a Walmart. And it was inspired by Christchurch, which we talked about. 2020, Minneapolis, 26-year-old supporter of anti-government group Boogaloo Boys. So I mentioned the Boogaloo Boys before, and I mentioned that there was a connection. So do you know what the name Boogaloo Boys, you've heard of the Boogaloo Boys maybe in connection to some of these things? Okay, so they're one of these organizations, like the Proud Boys and things like that. They call themselves the Boogaloo Boys. Do you have any idea what they might be referring to with that name?
Boogaloo.
What's Boogaloo?
How's it spelled?
Oh, Boogaloo. Boogaloo.
Boogaloo.
Boogaloo.
Boogaloo Boys?
Boogaloo Boys.
Boogaloo Boys. And these are white nationalists?
Yeah.
Boogaloo. Boogaloo?
Boogaloo.
Beluga whales? They're white.
Do you remember a movie from the 80s? Electric Boogaloo?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. What is it? Breaking 2, Electric Boogaloo?
Yeah, yeah.
So the joke on 4chan was that we need a new civil war. We can call it Civil War 2, Electric Boogaloo. Boogaloo. So A, they named themselves after that idea, right? So Boogaloo was like Civil War II, Electric Boogaloo. And then they started playing with the name because they want to always stay ahead of people understanding what they were referring to. Kind of. So Boogaloo, they started referring to as like Big Luau, because it's like Boogaloo, Big Luau, Big Luau.
Is this where the tiki torches come from?
Well, that's my theory. Someone actually posted a thing on one of the comments in YouTube that they think that that wasn't connected. I think it is because, first of all, they wear Hawaiian shirts, and that's become one of the things. They'll wear these Hawaiian shirts. Why are they wearing Hawaiian shirts? It's for the Big Luau. What Big Luau? Oh, it's Civil War II, Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah. It's like the Let's Go Brandon thing.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought the tiki torches were intentionally a reference to that. Someone said that it was just more of a coincidence. I don't know. I don't think they actually have many coincidences in these things. They seem pretty intentional, but whatever. In either case, all of this stuff originates initially from memes on 4chan and 8chan. And oftentimes they're started literally as just a joke, but then they kind of get like, the joke gets carried out further and further. And then they're like, well, let's just call ourselves this. And then let's, and you know, that's 2020 Oakland and California. I'm so... 32-year-old active duty Air Force Staff Sergeant, self-identified member of the Boogaloo Boys movement, allegedly kills a federal protective security officer and wounds another. It's a movement, man, and they have this ideology, and then they carry out these acts. There's more, but honestly, I'm tired. This is just frustrating. And what's the good news in all this? The good news is that this isn't, this is, when I started the trail, it was 20,000 this, thousands dead, right? Like, now it's like, okay, an individual lone gunman killed, and every one of them is a horrible tragedy. So if there is a silver lining, is that they appear to not be maybe as numerous and as massively supported by all the institutions and as deadly in all their offenses, but it's active and it's alive and well, and they really believe this stuff, and they're really gunning for a race war.
Yeah, literally. Wow. Yeah, it's interesting to see that through line that you depicted, and yeah, it is depressing. Well, let's take a break, and when we get back, the rest of this episode will just be for patrons of the podcast, and become a patron if you want to hear the rest. And everyone out there, please take care of yourself, because
you deserve it.
All right, welcome to the Patron's Own Patrons. Birdo, take us away.
All right, so what I wanted to talk about now is we basically went through the history of Nazis, what led to Hitler's rise, all these things, and then some of the post-war effects, and then we covered the horrible history of acts, not even all of it, just like highlights. But really, and then we've also talked a lot about the current events and things that are influenced now, political aspects, all these things.
Yeah, I think we effectively drew strong connections throughout the past 150 years that really sheds a light on the current events. Because, you know, you see the current events, you're just some wacko that was anti-Semitic, you know, there's all sorts of wackos.
But it seems isolated.
Yeah, but when you see it in light of history and you actually look into the manifestos and the Discord servers, it's a through line of, you know, from the Civil War through eugenics and the Nazis and post-war and KKK. Like it's currently happening. It looks slightly different, but it's currently happening.
Yeah. So what I want to do is I want to touch on a few topics that are kind of my summation of some of the contributing factors here. The first part that I want to talk about is a paradox. A lot of these movements, I'd say most of these movements, are Christian. What I mean is, like, they root themselves on the Christian religion and ideology. There are different flavors of it, and some are more, some are less focused on the religious part. But including the Nazis, they adhered to that religion. And I find this to be a great paradox. for many reasons. I'm not the first one, of course. This is like well established. But the first most obvious one is that, and I used to be a Christian. I was raised Catholic, and I was a full-fledged Christian well into, like, I think into my early 30s or something. And the reason I even retained that was because I really believed that at its core, the idea of do unto others and be kind and let's work together and let's build a better world and let's shepherd take good care of the world and shepherd each other and all these things. They just sounded amazing and right. And my grandma sat me down when I was little and she would tell me these things. And it's just like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. And I really believed in that. And I still do. And you know, so it was kind of a bonus that, like, oh, you're telling me the dude who created this whole thing, or maybe at least his son, that's his position? Well, that's great. Oh, phew. Imagine if they were like an evil dictator or something. That's pretty awesome. And so, you know, I think that to me was always a great thing. So the idea of grabbing that and being like, okay, good. I love that. And therefore, I hate these people and I want to kill them and murder them and lynch them and torture them. What? Because it's one thing, still wouldn't make sense, right? But because there's so many other aspects that we'll talk about in a second. But it's one thing if someone like was obsessed with a few passages from the Old Testament about destruction and vengeance. You know, they're like, oh, look, God is vengeful. They did this. And he's like, oh, I'm going to destroy the town. Yeah, smite them, burn it to the ground. Okay, I think I'm going to gravitate to that and go and smite and burn things to the ground. Horrible. But I could sort of see like the logical through line. But to then get to like, no, what's the modern Christian ideology? It's not that. In fact, any preacher you talk to and you ask about those passages from the Old Testament will tell you, well, that's taken, you know, it's historical context. That's, they'll disavow that pretty loudly and clearly.
Disavow what?
The passages from the Old Testament that are violent or retributional.
I don't think they would all disavow that.
Many will. I mean, you could ask...
Are you by like Sodom and Gomorrah kind of thing?
No, not so much that, but the passages which is like where God is instructing to go and kill every man, woman, and child, and including all the babies, and kill all the animals and things like that, or where Abraham is told to kill this child, and or where the woman, or he's like sleep with her, but like get her pregnant, and like all that.
Maybe
have
you've heard
wives.
Different. Maybe
no,
you've
absolutely.
Heard different.
I've heard different. Absolutely. All my life, whenever, if ever, anyone had actually read those passages, and a hand went up. The answer was always some variant of like, you know, those were very different times, and that was written for people to understand in the cultural context and the blah, 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 blah.
Well, what I heard was that, okay, it was a different time, but that there's a definite lesson to be made, you know, because most people that believe in the Bible and are Christian don't take a nuanced point of view. Like, to me, if one wanted to be Christian, they could say, well... there are some horrible things in the Bible, and there's some wonderful things that we can look at, we can evaluate it. And there's some counterfactual things, you know, like the earth being made in 6 days or 7 days. We don't have to take it literally, but most people do tend to take it fairly literally. And so there's a tendency for religious people to just shoehorn things in, you know, it's God testing you, or God works in mysterious ways, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if you watch... I don't make thousands, definitely hundreds of hours of debates, like I sadly have, especially when I was very obsessed about it, between Christian apologists and atheists, or at least non-Christian apologists. You'll hear these arguments constantly, because the atheist or non-Christian apologist will rightfully try to say, wait, you're basing your ideology on passages like this, and then they'll proceed to read one of those passages. And then the other side will inevitably use a variant of arguments. The most along the lines of what you're saying would be, yeah, but this is why the New Testament brought a new deal and blah, blah, blah. But even then, because when you think of some of the implications where angels came down and said, hey, you know, we're going to burn this whole place down. Send your women out. They'll be raped, but, you know, send the women out, because the man of the house is like, I'm going to send my daughters out because I don't want these two guests to be hurt. Like, that's in there. And how do they justify it? It's like, well, it's cultural. It's at the time.
When you have a group of people who are being led by essentially cult leaders, and there are two ideas that everyone just takes for granted, which is that Christianity is flawless and the Bible is flawless and is the actual literal word of God. And you also have the notion that white people are superior and that people of color are inferior in all sorts of ways, not just inferior like competence, but they're depraved, they're sex crazed, they're devious, they're liars, they are violent, they're savage, you know, just all the things. So when you have those two ideas, then, you know, when you're a cult, then you can create an entire system that makes sense to you. But from the outside, it doesn't make any fucking sense.
Right. And so leading me to another aspect of the first part of the paradox is, again, that the only way that I could understand someone maybe being like, well, I don't know, the Bible's really violent, so I'm going to do violence, is if they're only focusing on those Old Testament passages, right? But certainly if they're like a modern Christian and they're like, but do unto others, and they have the Sermon on the Mount and all the things, and it doesn't make sense. But there's another aspect. Even if you're basing your ideology on the Old Testament are the books of the Torah. That this is the Jewish faith, the Jewish ideology, and the people in those chapters that are being blessed by God to do the horrible things are the Jewish people, not the Aryan descendants from Atlanta gods or whatever. They're the Jewish people. So even if in some way you were doing like that, you're still wrong on the basis of that. Like, I don't even understand what you're doing. So to me, this whole thing is this amazing paradox. And this is, I really believe, why when we were talking about the Nazis, why some of them were trying to establish essentially a new kind of religion, because they felt the flaws in their own kind of Christian fundamentals. They're like, well, that's the Jewish thing. We need a new thing. And that's why this idea of like, okay, well, we descend from this other thing, and there's all this thing. I could easily have seen something more akin to like a Greek pantheon arising from a combination of the Norse mythology and the Atlantis myth and all these things, becoming the de facto religion.
Yeah, but you need some resonance with the current culture.
Yes, and
you
that
can't
was
just
the...
completely go...
So, but I could, yeah, right, but they, you could have imagined a rewriting of like, you've been lied to. Jesus was a Nordic Viking.
Yeah.
In the land of the...
But you don't even have to do that because you just morph the religion around... your ideology, you know, and in some ways you could argue that in many communities, maybe even for Nazis, the Jesus figure did become essentially a Norse figure, you know?
I mean, essentially you're not wrong because literally what I'm saying is that the paradox is there because apparently you don't need to resolve the paradox. You can just have both.
Right. Yeah. The paradox, and I, you know, it's something that us on our side will often bandy about, which is like, I don't understand how you could be a Christian and be pro-killing of people abroad or of...
Be pro-life specifically and also be killing the... Yeah.
But also that you don't care about down-and-out immigrants that are at a level of oppression and poverty that no American has ever experienced. You know, the fact that they traveled in a caravan for thousands of miles just on the off chance that they would make it to the border, on the off chance that they'd make it across the border, on the off chance that they wouldn't be thrown back over the wall. These are desperate, desperate people taking desperate, desperate actions. You're Christians. Jesus... What would Jesus do? Would Jesus say, stay out of my country? No, Jesus would let those people in, open arms, feed them, house them. And many Americans actually do that. You know, so how do you reconcile? Well, it doesn't matter because when you need to believe something and you've been indoctrinated and you've been cultivized, then it just doesn't matter. Yeah. It's like looking at the Waco, Texas, the David Koresh people, and trying to make sense of their religion. It's pointless. Yeah. And it's pointless to argue with them because they've already thought of all. And even if they haven't thought of it, they'll find some way to shoehorn it in.
An example of the extreme cognitive dissonance that you would encounter, and this is a real situation with a relative of mine. We were confronted over the holidays with this reality of, aren't you concerned about the way that women are being treated that are trying to get to our country and cross the border, the way they're treated along the way, they're trigger alert, they're raped, they're, you know, brutalized, right? That's the premise. And of course, any of us progressives or whatever, we'd be like, yeah. Horrible. I hope you're getting to what I think you're getting to, but I bet you you're not.
Oh, I lost the thread. So you're saying that
the other
a conservative
side,
person
conservative side,
is presenting
saying,
this.
Aren't you concerned with the horrible things that are happening to the women?
Yes, we are concerned.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
But then what's the outcome? So we follow this logical thread. We would think that like...
We shouldn't be inviting them. We should make them stay home.
It doesn't even, to your point earlier, you don't even have to get that far. Because you are trying to still like connect dots.
Oh, that everyone south of the border is a rapist?
Sure, but you're still trying to connect dots.
Oh.
Premise A, aren't you concerned about these women getting terribly, premise B, we need a tall wall and we need to kick out all the immigrants.
What?
Premise A. Conclusion.
No, that doesn't even make sense in their system.
It does.
So this person is saying, aren't you concerned? Because this person knows that you're a liberal.
That's why
aren't
we need
you
to...
concerned that this woman is being raped? Yeah. And therefore we need the wall.
Like, yeah, we need to stop this tragedy at the border.
Because a victim of rape.
Do you know what's happening to those women on their way here? It's horrible. We need to stop all this. That's why Biden needs to, and since he won't do it, we need to stop this. We need to build that wall. We need to get all these immigrants out of here.
Wow.
So then, of course, what you would like to hear is, so I learned that these women are being treated horribly. So the first thought in my head was, oh, wait, because I was told that all these people coming in are the rapists and the murderers and the drug dealers. You're telling me there's women trying to come through that are being...
I'm sorry. I keep trying to return to this well. So... Are they saying that the fellow caravan travelers are also the rapists? Like there are men and women that are coming, and that the women are being raped by the people that are with them. And if we let in the women, then we let in the men.
No. I'm just trying to. We don't want to let in. Yeah. So it's three steps too many. It's the same kind of argumentation of like, aren't you concerned that a man would, again, trigger alert, sexually abuse a teenager in a bathroom? Aren't you concerned about that? Ipso facto, we need to ban trans people in this country.
Right.
Like, this is the logic we're talking about. But so what I'm saying is, like, I would love to say, well, no, actually, I am concerned. Let's talk about, actually, you're a Christian, right? So let's go through this. I'm glad you agree that there are people trying to come into our country that are victims. I'm glad you agree. And that they're horribly victimized.
By the way, asterisk, the constant obsession with conservatives and people being raped. I just have to say, like, there's a focus.
Yeah. So I'm glad you agree that there are victims. That's great. What should we do about it? Because, so what's your first solution? Well, we should build a wall. Okay. Do you think that's going to stop them from being abused? Oh, I don't know. But because then they won't want to come here. Oh, so you think that in their country where they're fleeing, knowing full well that they're going to be sexually abused and probably killed, the place they're fleeing from is so nice that they're fine staying there?
Yeah.
But this, unfortunately, to your point earlier, you cannot connect the dots because it's a cult, it's an indoctrination.
Yeah.
Because we tried. We really tried. We tried saying those things, and it doesn't work. It doesn't land.
Over the holidays, you tried.
I tried. Well, in this case, it was my wife. My wife tried.
Yeah.
And it's brave of her because usually she just kind of like doesn't want to deal with it, doesn't want to try. And this time she tried and failed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems.
Anyways.
Pointless.
But so, you know, that's the thing. So I find this very intriguing. However, I also find a glimmer of hope. Maybe I'm naive, but I keep waiting, hoping that a Christian leader will actually spring up from the right side of the fence.
Mitt Romney. I mean, he's Mormon, but
like maybe even a more typically traditional Baptist, like evangelical, whatever, with the fire of God in his words.
I mean, Obama is a pretty staunch Christian.
He's black.
But I'm just saying, like,
I'm saying I want someone that looks like them, that speaks their language with their accent, with their brand of Christianity to spring up.
Bill Clinton.
Yeah, actually, in a way, except that he ended up being a sexual deviant for their eyes and all these things. So you see what I'm saying? Like, we need someone that's pure in their own definition.
They'll find a way is the thing. They'll find a
way.
Am
I being naive? I'm being naive.
No, I think it's a strategy that the Democratic Party is considering.
But that's my hope, is that because if you did actually focus, because look, I'm not a Christian anymore, but if you did focus on what it's supposed to be, the modern conception of what Christianity is supposed to be, and you really did that.
Yeah, but it's an impossible task because if they're too much like them, then none of us would vote for them. You know, if they're anti,
I'm okay with that. Though
if they're anti-abort,
but
do you
I'm
mean?
Okay with that.
What do you mean?
Because I would much rather have someone that maybe I didn't want to vote for and but did get elected.
Oh.
But who's not trying to dissolve the country.
You're saying a Republican candidate.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought you were saying a Democratic.
No, that's still what I'm
going to. Oh, I see.
No.
Right. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So yeah.
Yeah.
That's my hope too.
That denounces the actual snakes in the house, right?
Yeah.
And still says, and look, I don't agree with these guys. And yes, I still want to.
We've already talked about this. I'll take a George W. I'll take a Mitt Romney for sure. I'll take a John McCain for sure. I'll take a...
Well, and by the way, the reason, because a lot of people might get up in arms, George W. was responsible for a lot of people getting killed.
Yeah, George W. was
and 4 years later, well, okay, 8 years later. But 8 years later, he left and we had new leadership.
Yeah, he didn't threaten the underpinnings of our society the way that Donald Trump does. So along these lines, I this is relevant because I didn't know if this would ever be shoehorned in, but I looked up some polls, Berto. So this is from CBSNews.com. January 6th, the actions of those who forced their way into the Capitol. Okay. So they're asking hundreds or thousands of people about their opinions about it. So January 6th. So regarding the actions of those who forced their way into the Capitol, for everyone, regardless of what political leanings they have, what percentage approves of the actions of the January 6th people.
Approves.
Okay. All Americans.
Okay. Percentage of all Americans that approve the actions of the rioters.
Of the, so you got to look, you got to, it's okay. Specific. Those who forced their way into the Capitol. So it's not the people that necessarily went into Pelosi's office. It's like those who forced their way into the Capitol.
Of all Americans, it's 30%.
Close, 22.
Okay, that's actually better. Good.
Republicans. What percentage of Republicans?
70%.
Lower.
Okay, good. 60%.
Lower.
Really?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay, 40%.
Lower.
What?
Yes.
Okay, now you're making me happy.
Right.
30%.
30%.
Are you kidding me?
No.
That's great news.
Yes.
I mean, it's horrible. That's millions and millions of people. But
see, this is what your...
That's good news.
This is what your left extremist news doesn't tell
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
MAGA. What percentage of MAGA...
Oh, I see.
...approve of the January 6th people who forced their way into the Capitol?
That's more like 60%.
Lower?
Really? Still of MAGA?
Yeah.
Oh, you should have saved this for the very end. All right. Okay, well, 40%.
43, good.
Okay.
Okay.
What percent of Donald Trump?
Pardons. So just to highlight this, the vast majority of Republicans, 70%, disapprove of the actions of those who forced their way into the Capitol.
Yeah, that's really good news.
Most MAGA people disapprove. Yeah.
That's really good news.
I get chills thinking about that.
Yeah.
That makes me unexpected.
Happy. I want to hug all these people.
Me too. Me too. We're Americans.
Turns out I have MAGA brothers.
We agree. We agree with MAGAs and most Republicans.
And to that point, I remember the day of. Sorry, I'm having burp attack. I remember the day of. I'm so happy. It's all coming up. It's all bubbling up. The day of, one of the people that I had been feuding with on Facebook, that day... They made a comment of like, okay, this is too much. Now, sadly, later it still went south. But at the time, I was like, we can agree on something.
Good. Regarding pardons that should be given to those people who forced their way into the Capitol, what percent agree that, yes, pardons should be given to those people who forced their way into the Capitol?
Well, if 20% felt it was okay, I'm going to go like 15%.
It's higher. It's 38%.
Oh, I see. Because some people might have disagreed, but they're like, they should still get pardoned.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Why? But what, 38%? That's actually really high.
Yeah. Republicans. Oof.
Well, then 50%.
66.
Oh, now it's hurting.
Yeah. So that's not
MAGA.
Good because we need to have laws. You know, pardons are for people where the governor or a politician, some other official that has the authorization of pardon believes that, look, everyone knows, and because of a legal technicality, they can't be retried about this. So I'm going to pardon this person. Or,
which is, by the way, still always a risk because you never fully know.
Yeah.
But okay.
But
we'll take it.
Yeah. And especially if you're a politician and the vast majority of your voters are agreeing with it.
Right.
The other situation is like, look, the Civil War was a lot of bad things happen. And if we just sit here and hold a grudge against our fellow Americans while we try to rebuild, then we'll be fighting forever. And I, the president, who was after Lincoln?
Ford? Or
no, that was, Ford was way later. Okay. Anyway, whoever was president after President Lincoln, I'm guessing pardoned some of the people that were identified as essentially rebels and insurrectionists and an enemy of the state. And so...
Were they allowed to hold office?
I don't know.
No, but they weren't. That's the 14th Amendment that they've been debating.
Okay. Well, the point is that pardons are for fairly unique situations. These individuals knowingly, and a lot of them planned, to commit a crime on one of the highest levels.
Yeah.
To not just commit a crime of the Capitol, not just commit a crime of overthrowing the election, but committing a crime to establish a dictatorship and to completely dismantle our entire constitutional republic. And so that, you do not pardon. You do not say, you know, it was a tough time. Or, mistakes were made. Or, everyone knows you're innocent. They weren't innocent. These people weren't, they're not innocent. They knew what they were doing. Many of the people in that riot did not go into the Capitol. because they didn't want to commit that crime. They marched towards the Capitol, and maybe I'm wrong, but I assume there are some people that were just like, no.
No, absolutely. There have been people interviewed that said that.
Like,
that said, I was there. I was like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, because that's like a crime. Yeah. That's that's okay. Because, you know, it was just a random rally of a cobbling together of all sorts of people. Anyway.
But there's this problem where, like, because one of the arguments is like, oh, you'll see the footage. Some of them are just kind of calmly walking down the hallways. And it's like, yeah, just because we live in a postmodernist civilization time period where people are ironic about everything, including breaking into the freaking Capitol, doesn't mean they're not trying to do what they're trying to do, which means literally trying to subvert the certification of the fair election that was held.
Well, yeah. Also, since there are so many people, running wouldn't be possible. Yeah. Also, you're overestimating the cardio of these folks. You know, last poll question. The U.S. democracy today is threatened. What percentage of everyone agreed with that? U.S. democracy today.
Okay, of everyone, I mean, I would certainly say yes, but of everyone, I would say 60%.
70%.
Okay, that's encouraging.
So a lot of Republicans agree with us.
Oh, but wait a minute, though. That includes the people that feel that it's because of Biden and us.
Certainly, and there's probably some Democrats that have a wackadoo. But I imagine a majority of the people that are saying yes are saying yes because everyone, Republican, most 70% of Republicans, the actions of those who forced their way into the Capitol, they disapprove of it. So Trump,
I'm going to go with your optimism on this one.
Trump and a lot of these folks do not represent what the Americans want. And that is encouraging. We can work together. Imagine if there was someone on media that actually stood up and said, hey, 70%, let's work together.
Well, one thing that
that never fucking happens because, that doesn't get any clicks.
It doesn't.
And doesn't give you any sort of ad placement dollars. Well, and doesn't give you any sort of Twitter algorithm, you know, bumping up. So we'll get what we get, which is to demonize everybody. It's encouraging and surprising. And also, what does that say that it's surprising to us? How come the media on either side isn't, at least to my ears, highlighting the fact that most Republicans agree that the January 6th individuals who broke into the Capitol disapprove of it?
All right. So the next thing I wanted to touch on is that in all these, the Nazi movement and a lot of these like ideologies, there are three elements that I think are really common and insidious. One of the things is that there's usually a savior in these fascist nationalistic movements. There's a savior like Hitler, Mussolini, that are basically going to be the embodiment of like everyone's hopes and dreams.
Yeah.
Let's do it, right?
Yeah. We heard from some of the leaders at the Charlottesville rally that they were waiting for that leader. They're like, is Trump the one? I don't know.
Right.
It doesn't seem like it. We need that. It's not me.
That's right.
We're waiting for our Messiah.
And to be honest, not that this is comparable, but you did see a little bit of this hope with Obama. With Obama, people were hoping that he was kind of a savior for the country at the time. You know, that was the whole hope and change. And it was like, there was a bit of idealization of Obama. But of course, Obama wasn't sitting there saying horrible things that he was going to deport people, all these things. It's just that there was a little bit of that same sense of like, we need a savior. The difference here is that a lot of us progressives, I don't have any special attachment to any politician.
Yeah.
The day that one of the politicians I look up to,
yeah,
is found to have been guilty of some corrupt thing, I'm like, well, as long as that's proven, I'm done.
I was thinking about this in the shower today, that this whole Hunter Biden thing that's happening currently, and you know, by the time you're listening to this, hopefully the current upswing of this will be over. But my position is, I don't really know much about this whole thing, but if Hunter Biden did something illegal, Joe Biden did something illegal, or if there's some corruption there, then yes, throw the book at these fuckers.
Because
I don't give a fuck if they're on my, or I voted for them.
I know.
So, but that's different.
That's very different.
Yeah.
Very different. And that's, so this anoint a savior, key ingredient. Number two, kill the press, or you could extend it to kill the truth, but kill the press, key part of the playbook, because you need to control the narrative. And then the last bit here is this idea of the Overton window. I mentioned this a few times. The Overton window.
Finally, we got to the Overton window. You teased me in chapter one.
All right. So, yes, the Overton window is something that keeps coming up over and over. You may have heard Glenn Beck talking about this because he sort of recently popularized this term.
I don't follow Glenn Beck.
Yeah, yeah. I know. But when he was still on Fox, I don't know if you remember, I know you didn't see him, but do you remember he was like famous for doing all these little flow charts and PowerPoint presentations and he'd like point to, and he'd have all these diagrams of how
the only
like
thing I remember is a chalkboard that
chalkboard, and he'd be like the Bilderbergs connected to the ankle bone and the wrist bone and all these bullshit things, right?
Yeah.
Well, he spoke about the Overton window. So what is the Overton window? And the idea was that there is this window of political viability for topics, for ideology. And if the thing you're proposing or talking about falls outside of that current window, you're going to be seen as too extreme on either side. Hmm. And therefore, you might be shut down, canceled even, whatever. But if it falls inside, you're mostly okay. You might get some repercussions mostly. And if that was the end of the story, no problem. But the problem is that this Overton window can be shifted. And so how do you shift the Overton window? Well, you shift it by eking just outside of it and desensitizing so that then the first time you say it, it's shocking, but then it's a little desensitized. And you see folks like Trump doing this all the time. Mm. When someone says, I could shoot someone in Fifth Avenue and get away with it, it's like, what? That's so shocking. But now the Overton window's shifted a little bit. It doesn't mean he can go and shoot someone in Fifth Avenue, but we're talking about it. We're having a conversation. The next thing is like, I think I can send SEAL Team Six. Thank you, SEAL Team, to assassinate my political opponents. Well, I'm not gonna do it, but we're talking about it. That's shifting the Overton window. These are recipe ingredients that are being used actively and have been used actively. And it's important to, I think, important for us to be aware of them. Like, oh, yeah. I recognize that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, yeah. Wow. It's really interesting. I mean, after going through all of your outline, you know, again, if you had just sort of described it briefly and summarized it, you know, I'd be thinking, oh, okay, yeah, I guess there's some connection. But, and I hope that the listeners are experiencing this too. In order to understand something as complex as the psychology of neo-Nazis and the current rise of white nationalists in the United States and I guess around the world, you have to absorb a lot of details about history and society and and about individual events and about ideology and politics. And it's interesting. Like with the IBLP thing, when we were doing that whole thing, it's one thing just to learn about the taglines. It's another thing to just really absorb.
Yeah.
You get into the details and then you zoom out and look at it from afar. And then you zoom in on another part and you zoom out and you zoom in and you zoom out and you emerge with, well, utter terror, really. Yeah. Because before doing this deep dive, I consider the neo-Nazi thing the way I always considered it, which is like a couple wackos who end up on Jerry Springer.
Yeah.
And now it's, you know, changes my mind about that, obviously.
And I feel that too. And especially because, like what you're saying, a lot of times when I've seen press coverage, a lot of these folks, the Boogaloo Boys, other things, there is a sense in me of like kind of dismissing it. Like, yeah, that's wacky, funny, weird, whatever. But because I don't have all this context, and I've just barely scratched the surface. I did a crash course. There's people probably listening that know 60,000 times more. But after even just this crash course, I'm realizing, oh, the world for a lot of these people that have been indoctrinated in this, the world is like this massive, deep, 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 like hole full of mysteries and conspiracies and backdrops and mysticism and mythology.
Right.
And it's not a simple like, okay, I guess I'll go protest today.
Right. In the past, you had the KKK, one of the groups, but a major group, and they wore hoods.
Yeah.
And they would meet in the woods and they would burn a cross. And today, it's not hoods, it's anonymous handles on 4chan or on Reddit or on Discord. And you don't have to travel to the backwoods of Alabama to find one of these groups of people. And by the way, there are KKK groups in Washington State, so I'm not suggesting that.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, one of the headquarters is in Idaho, which is not, you know, just on the border. Yeah. And you don't have to travel. You don't even have to wear a hood. You just have to go online.
Yeah.
And it's recruiting all sorts of people, and they have to stay underground because they understand that it's not socially acceptable generally, you know, yeah. And there are illegal things being discussed. So it stays underground and builds underground. And for you and I living in regular America, unless you look for it, you wouldn't ever think it was there.
Yeah.
But it's there.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
It is.
Well, that does it for chapter 11 of additional terror and demoralization. And everyone out there, take a deep breath and hug your people and take care of yourself, because
you deserve it.